of the world it goes by different names. Bigfoot or Sasquatch, probably by far, are the most popular names when we talk about this creature. And that's what we're talking about tonight on the program. A hairy creature. A creature said to be taller than man. Ape-like. Stinky or smelly with glowing eyes. It's a creature that the Native Americans, of course, first told of. But its popularity has actually grown far beyond the reservation. The modern-day Bigfoot movement actually is continuing to grow. And it's very evident by the amount of festivals that are popping up all over the place, it seems. And I'm very sad to say that we couldn't make it to some of those festivals this year that we planned to go to because they didn't happen due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We were going to make the trip out again to Baker City, and then we were going to join the Oregon Bigfoot Festival in their new venue, neither of which were able to happen. So I'm really sad about that, but, you know, there's always next year, as they say. And so I hope that that is the case and that we can actually do this again next year. That would be really awesome. But not only are there festivals that are happening all over the place, I've seen stories of statues, something just as simple as a statue of Bigfoot, something that just resembles Bigfoot, turns into a popular tourist attraction, a tourist destination. Bigfoot's even being used in forest fire public safety campaigns. I was actually just watching the news here in my local market and hearing about a wildfire that we have going. Well, they're actually using Bigfoot in public safety campaigns to try to tell people, you know, basically, please be careful and don't light the forest on fire. And then, of course, there's the television shows that are all over the place. Some fake, some real, some you don't know. And so those are always fascinating to watch. They're always coming up with new television shows, it seems. A couple of months ago, the transportation department in the state just north of me up in Washington released videos of, and I say videos because there were more than one in different locations of purported Bigfoot sightings. And Arizona, their Department of Transportation a couple of years back also released video of a purported Bigfoot sighting. And so far more often than before, these days it seems that we're hearing of tales of encounters that people are having with Bigfoot that are actually being documented. I mean, to be able to document a Bigfoot encounter is something in and of itself. We've demonstrated on this program why it's not so easy as just finding all the evidence that you expect you would on a Bigfoot hunt. You may hear something, you may see something, but getting actual evidence of that is a different story. And there are people who collect, you know, physical evidence in the field that they say is evidence of Bigfoot sightings, such as footprints. I mean, that's probably the most popular evidence when it comes to Bigfoot sightings is the footprints, certainly is the most popular, I would say. And then, of course, you have other things like hair. Sometimes you have scat. I would hate to just reckon a thought of what that might smell like. P.U. And then you hear of sightings. There was one that actually just kind of resonated with me just a few weeks ago with Brad Bernard's Paranormal News brought us this Bigfoot sighting report.
A researcher says a woman was chased by Bigfoot in the Hudson Valley of New York. Gail Beatty, the Hudson Valley's lead researcher of Bigfoot, says a woman told her she had a violent encounter with the mysterious creature on July 2nd in Hyde Park, according to News 12 in Westchester.
He estimates it at between 6 and 7 feet tall. This huge creature came running towards her. The bushes were parting, and she heard these heavy footsteps. The creature jumped up in the tree above her, and, you know, branches and leaves started falling on her, and then the creature started to move from tree to tree. She said it was terrifying.
Beatty's team and others have photos of large footprints found in parts of the Hudson Valley, large hairy figures in the distance, and videos capturing this mysterious sound.
Just imagine a swinging ape-like creature that looks like Bigfoot in the way that it was described in that report. That would terrify me, and so I can imagine that it might terrify other people out there as well. And that was just one account we hear of. It's probably every week, if I really wanted to look back at it, about every week or every other week, it seems like, a couple times a month, we're hearing of just some encounter that somebody says that they have with a Bigfoot, with one of these Sasquatch creatures. And, you know, the popularity, as I mentioned, I think I saw a campaign maybe last year or the year before. It was the Forest Service. I know the Fire Marshal's Office is now using Bigfoot in public safety campaigns, kind of like Smokey the Bear was used. I mean, now they're using Bigfoot in this stuff. So the popularity of Bigfoot certainly is growing, and it has evolved over time. So have the names that people use to describe these beings, but we're all talking about the same thing pretty much. The names may be different, but the descriptions are the same. And so tonight, our program is all about Bigfoot. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. We'll be right back.
Into the Paranormal is streaming 24/7 on the TuneIn Radio app and at paranormalradio.com.
Sensor button here. Just don't tell YouTube. You're traveling into the paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
You know, I mentioned the public safety campaigns. It's not just the Forest Service and the Fire Marshal's Office. There was a creative way, you may agree or disagree, that this was a good idea. But it wasn't too long ago when we started going through this whole COVID-19 pandemic and the whole social distancing thing came into our purview. Brad Bernards had a report on Paranormal News that he delivered to us about something that was being done to encourage people to socially distance.
Recent photos of Bigfoot in Tulsa have been revealed as a campaign to get people active but at a distance. You can add one more item to the general rules at Turkey Mountain. Yellow signs have popped up with a message, please practice social distancing on the trails at 6 feet apart. There's been a viral campaign involving photos of Bigfoot on the trails.
We came out here and we staged several sighting photos, and from there it exploded. It absolutely exploded.
Parks employee Ryan Howell, courtesy of KTUL-TV. The River Parks employee used the costume to bring some humor to the situation and promote social distancing.
Turns out social distance Sasquatch is actually just me in a costume.
Well, how about that? I don't recommend that, by the way. I do not recommend you getting into a ghillie suit or a Bigfoot costume or anything like that and venturing out anywhere beyond your own property. I'll just say that. It's just not a good idea because there are people out there who want to get rich and famous by collecting the ultimate evidence of Bigfoot. And if you look a lot like Bigfoot, you may take on some gunfire, and that's it for you. I don't recommend it. And what made me think of that report was the memes that I see going around, which I've seen for years, but now they take on a whole new meaning. Before it was, you know, hide-and-seek champion. Bigfoot, hide-and-seek champion. That was the meme that was going around. And now it's social distance champion, you know, because here's Bigfoot. And Bigfoot schooling us all on this whole social distancing stuff, because it just it doesn't matter to Bigfoot. Right? I mean, Bigfoot don't play the same game that we play, so it's always socially distant. And so it's beating us at the game that we're trying to play. So that's what made me think about that. And so I wanted to share that retrospective look, because it's always, those are always great reports. Those are timeless reports from Brad. They do stand the test of time. It's a shame that we only play those once on the show, and then they go into the archive, and hopefully you hear them many more times, and then they play, you know, throughout the week on our stream when the show replays. But man, that's good stuff. So anytime I have a chance to go back and listen to some of Brad's reports as they relate to the topic at hand, I certainly want to. Now, there's a new report out that we'll put up in our next break on social media, for those who want to just take a gander over there and wait for it. It's a report that ranks the states in relationship to Bigfoot sightings using data available from the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, or BFRO. Now, to no surprise, is Washington. I went up to Squatch Fest a couple of months ago, 7 months ago actually now, up in Longview, Washington. And they have Squatch Fest up there, and that is the top dog for Bigfoot sightings. There are more Bigfoot sightings on record in Washington. There are more Bigfoot sightings per capita in Washington. Second to that is California, and that's no surprise. That's where the famous Patterson-Gimlin footage came from, and where Jerry Crew filmed as well. And then Florida, which I don't know of a lot of famous Bigfoot sightings from Florida, but that comes in third, followed by Ohio and Illinois. And so that's the top five when it comes to Bigfoot sightings. My home state of Oregon falls in at number six. However, our sightings per 100,000 residents puts us at second of all states, which means you have a higher chance of seeing Bigfoot out here in Washington and Oregon in these Pacific Northwest states than you do have in any other states besides Idaho and Montana that are connected. But even Idaho and Montana don't get as many Bigfoot reports. In fact, very, very few Bigfoot reports. Although when you break it down to the population and the likelihood that it is that you might see Bigfoot based on how many people there are on record living there and how many sightings have been recorded. Now, that's to not include those who don't report their Bigfoot sightings, because if you don't report your Bigfoot sightings, you can't be a part of the statistics. But based on what we know, Washington and Oregon have the most Bigfoot sightings by population. And this is from satelliteinternet.com. I've seen this pull from them regarding this and I think other subjects regarding the paranormal over time. I mean, this is not the first time they've done this. So what I'm saying is that they've ranked these states before, and it seems to be pretty accurate information from all those that I've talked to. And I've talked to a lot of Bigfoot researchers from a lot of different states as I go to these Bigfoot conferences and whatnot. Now, it's always cool to learn new things about any subject. And I have lots of books here in the studio, lots of them about UFOs, and ghosts and space and science and Bigfoot and everything. And I need more Bigfoot books. I mean, that's the God's honest truth. I need more Bigfoot books. I don't have very many Bigfoot books as opposed to some of the other subjects. And so maybe that's why I didn't know this fact. And as I was preparing for this show, I always try to learn some new things that maybe I didn't know about the subjects. Maybe some things we can discuss. Maybe there's some things that you didn't know either that we could learn. In Japan, Bigfoot is known as Hibagon. H-I-B-A-G-O-N. Hibagon. That is what they call Bigfoot in Japan. Now, why Hibagon? Well, it's because there was a Bigfoot sighting that happened in Hiroshima 50 years ago, actually, this summer, 1970. And I didn't know that the Bigfoot tale of 1970, 50 years later, still influences the town. This report from the Asahi Shimbun says, on the evening of July 20th, 1970, a man in a pickup truck came across a rather unsettling sight. It was an ape-like creature walking on a mountainside. After word spread about the encounter, other locals came forward with their own reports of an animal walking upright. Their descriptions were similar. The beast was around, they say, 1.6 meters tall, which I've converted to American understanding, which would be about 5'2", which I think is relatively small on the scale of Bigfoot encounters. But it had a gorilla-like body and a face shaped like an inverted triangle. The locals started calling the creature Hibagon, a reference to Hiba Mountain, actually, which was in the town that this took place in Hiroshima. Now, news and entertainment media began flooding the small town surrounded by mountains to find out. The locals' lives were turned upside down, it says, by the sudden attention. But that was only the beginning of Hibagon fever, as it's known. The town became inseparable from the creature, and today residents still talk about the legend of Hibagon. Well, we know it as Bigfoot, and we know it as Sasquatch. We know it as the Abominable Snowman, and there's other names for it as well. But we're all talking about the same thing. A creature that supposedly lives in the forest and conceals itself at every opportunity. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. My guest on the program tonight is the director and co-producer of the documentary, Don't Call Me Bigfoot. And his name is Jeremy Norrie. He'll be joining me after the break.
Connected with us on social media, give us a like and follow at Parabnormal Show.
Parabnormal News. I'm Brad Bernards. Fox News reports a swarm of minor earthquakes near California's Salton Sea is raising concern about the potential for a larger tremor at the state's San Andreas Fault. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the dozens of tremors began in the early morning on Monday, ranging in size from a 2.6 magnitude quake to a 4.6 magnitude quake northwest of Palm Springs and the Salton Sea.
It's only the fourth time in the 88 years of modern records that such a swarm has occurred in that region. Big earthquakes on this section of the fault rupture on average every 250 years. Now, it hasn't ruptured since 1690, 330 years ago.
That's courtesy 23 ABC News. The area is overdue for a big one. According to the Los Angeles Times, there is generally a 20% chance of a magnitude 7 or higher earthquake on the fault over the next 30 years. The iconic Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico has gone dark, at least for a little while, according to Space.com. One of the telescope's supporting cables snapped early Monday morning, ripping a 100-foot-long gash in the giant radio dish, according to the University of Central Florida. The observatory has been shut down while engineers assess the damage and formulate a fix. The 1,000-foot-wide Arecibo got up and running in 1963. It was the world's largest single-dish radio telescope until April 2016, when China's 500-meter aperture spherical telescope claimed the mantle. Arecibo has done a wide variety of work during its long life, from tracking and imaging near-Earth asteroids to listening for possible signals from advanced alien civilizations. There's more news at parabnormalradio.com. I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
Bigfoot is real, according to a group of researchers.
This thing basically looked at him.
Talked to people who spent a lot of time in these woods.
He said it had kind of a monkey face.
And you'll hear the stories.
And then he said it had a weird smell.
They've been hearing strange screams and howls from the forest at night.
He estimates it at between 6 and 7 feet tall. This huge creature came running towards her. Creature started to move from tree to tree.
We saw red eyes watching them from the woods.
I suddenly turn around and I'm face to face with him. I mean, it just felt like there was something staring at me.
You were face to face with?
As far as I know, I suppose it'd be Bigfoot.
You can call Into the Paranormal outside North America at 503-506-0396. Or toll-free in North America at 855-790-TALK.
I'm Jeremy Scott. Thanks for spending your Saturday night with us. My guest now is Jeremy Norrie. He's director and producer of the documentary Don't Call Me Bigfoot, which you can find streaming on Amazon. He's also a director and producer of various other independent documentaries. And in Don't Call Me Bigfoot, he delves into the mythology, the sightings, and also the people who search out these mysterious beings known as Sasquatch. But as the movie says, don't call them Bigfoot or don't call me Bigfoot. Jeremy, it's a privilege to have you on the program.
Well, thank you very much. It's a privilege for me to be on.
And I like your name, by the way.
Oh, thank you. You as well.
So tell us about your interest in Bigfoot. When did it begin?
Oh, gosh. I think probably as a kid, I saw some sort of show that was Bigfoot related. And it drew my interest, you know, a little bit. But when I was more adult, I started seeing some of these other shows that were on, like, maybe Discovery, and they were kind of talking about a lot of real serious facts. You know, growing up, I thought, you know, Bigfoot wasn't real. I didn't really know much about it. Then seeing it on these shows, and you start to hear kind of the history of how Sasquatch kind of came to be, and the whole culture of it. All the different names from the Native Americans. There's a lot of compelling older evidence. And that really opened my mind to it. And as I kind of watched more shows and did my own little research into things, seeing if they were actually true or were people leaving things out, maybe, I started to kind of see myself believing that one of these various different similar creatures somewhere on the planet are probably real. That's how I feel. Like, eventually one of them is going to be proven.
Yeah, hopefully. It's too overwhelming. Maybe you don't believe in all of them, but some of them, at least one of them, as you say, has to be real.
That's kind of how I feel. It wouldn't surprise me if multiple are also real, you know? But I didn't realize how many animals are discovered every year. And I didn't realize the size of some discoveries. And some things, maybe they're not animals, but they're like, you know, huge caverns or things that, you know, are very large. Your common sense would think, oh, maybe like insects and small plant life and things like that are still getting discovered. But it's got to be minimal. And anything large, that's got to be extremely rare. Well, that's not necessarily the case. You know, Bigfoot being super large, it's very unlikely that it still exists in certain places. But then you hear so many stories And there's other animals that this has happened with. So I find all of the evidence really compelling, especially within the last 10 years. A lot of the fossil record stuff. Oh, my dogs are about to bark at something. Hey, guys, come on. So, yeah, like the discovery of like the Hobbit, the Homo floresiensis, I believe it's called. And that was just such compelling evidence to me. That really was powerful on reconnecting with the possibility that this could be real.
Do you think that Bigfoot is the same, or that there are many of these, or is this like a paraphysical or interdimensional being that can just appear, you know, anywhere to anyone?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of wild stories. Some of them kind of conflict with one another, but I haven't seen anything that has convinced me so far of the interdimensional, or that the Sasquatch are in collaboration with UFOs in some sort of way. Or there's a lot of stories out there that are really pushing the limits of what's, you know, easy to understand and what seems likely. They're kind of hard to believe stories. I haven't heard any of that that really made me believe 100% in them. They're interesting, and I still have an open mind to anything is possible, but I mostly think, especially with the historical evidence, that there's a lot of things that are very similar about these descriptions all over the world prior to people being able to really travel very efficiently all over the world. And that's compelling to me when I think about if a story is true or a story is not true. You know, these people aren't, you know, hearing each other's stories. It's very unlikely that they're copying each other or, you know, inspired by one another in any sort of way. What's really likely is that they had a similar experience. And granted, there is differences as well, you know, especially when you get out to like the Yeti or the skunk ape. But there's certain differences in size, in the way that, hey guys, in the way that they are described, like with their color. You know, some of them are kind of like red haired, and some of them are gray, and the descriptions do vary slightly in certain ways, but there's very strong similarities in a lot of ways as well, and the behavior varies a little bit too, where, you know, it seems like some maybe are mostly trying to avoid humans and whatnot, but then other stories are kind of aggressive, where, you know, they're maybe trying to intimidate humans or maybe harm humans, eat humans. I mean, who knows how far it really could go. And that kind of leans towards something real too to me, because we as humans vary so much in our personalities. And I like to point out also that a lot of people believe that the Bigfoots are, you know, human in some sort of way, maybe like a hybrid human with some sort of a more ape-like primate. Mm-hmm. And if that turned out to be true, I think mental illness or various mental struggles that these things could be going through would seem extremely likely, with them being out in isolation and dealing with all these things that they might not really understand or be intimidated by. So, you know, for me, I think that it's most likely some sort of a primate type, ape type creature that...
Hold that thought. Jeremy Norrie, my guest, and he is the director and co-producer. Don't Call Me Bigfoot. We'll continue right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to Into the Paranormal's free YouTube channel for shows, news, and exclusive reports. We'll be right back. searching for the truth, asking the hard questions as we ponder what could be. You're traveling into the paranormal.
Jeremy Norrie telling us right before the break that he thinks that there is some sort of human element to the whole Bigfoot phenomenon. And so, Jeremy, I'll let you complete that thought.
Oh, yeah, sure. Some of the most compelling arguments as to why you don't find Bigfoot remains and a lot of the behavioral aspects of the Sasquatch, various different descriptions, are very similar to humans. And, I guess that could lead towards hoaxing in certain aspects, but it wouldn't surprise me also if this was, some sort of variation. What the fossil record has started to tell us that it was entirely possible that there is more diverse species of human or human-like creatures earlier on, and that they interacted and maybe interbred more than we used to give credit for. So knowing that as a fact, basically now, that really opens up the possibility that, these creatures, if some of them are real, could be similar kinds of things that are, other human-like variations or Neanderthal or something in that realm,
But hybrid or like 100% human, what would you say? Are you more a believer in a fully physical being?
Yes, I believe they are physical beings. If some of these are proven, that's kind of what I think is going to be likely. To prove if there are any that are interdimensional or anything like that, that's going to be a really tough sell. Unless you have a body or some sort of physical evidence, the large majority of people are just not going to believe it. And in this situation, it has to pretty much be overwhelming at this point for it to be accepted. So, I kind of lean towards either entirely primate ape type of creature that we just haven't discovered yet, or some sort of like human-like, but also ape-like creature. Not necessarily a hybrid where like an ape and a human interbred together, but maybe something earlier on, similar to how maybe Neanderthals and humans maybe interbred and things like that.
Well, you mentioned that there's some similarities with other animals as far as how we perceive Bigfoot. Can you, tell us maybe what some of those other animals are?
So, absolutely. I mean, the large majority of the descriptions people kind of say are ape-like. But in nature, I guess bears do some of the same behavior as is described for some of the Bigfoot sightings. And just in our recent, don't remember exactly when, but there was some sort of an orangutan, I believe, discovered not all that distantly that was undiscovered previously to that. And I remember there being a gray ape of some kind that was 6 foot tall or something like that was discovered. And there are large animals that are discovered that are, even primates, where you would think, oh, we already know so much. We must know all the animals that are out there. That's far from true. And there are places that humans have never been still on this planet, which is surprising to a lot of people.
So there's a logical explanation then for Bigfoot, as far as you're concerned.
That's what I lean towards. I love these fantasy ideas and gosh, wouldn't it be awesome if somehow they were irrefutably proven? With the UFO stuff that we're seeing lately, it's like every UFO fan's dream come true that the government is finally starting to like come out with some of this stuff. And
if that were to happen with Bigfoot, you know, there's so many stories about how the government is covering up this evidence of Bigfoot that we already know that Bigfoot is a proven species, that people have maybe killed Bigfoot or you know, some sort of similar kind of creature. So
you said it. I'm aware that there's, I mean, I'm aware of the UFO cover-up. I guess I'm not aware of the Bigfoot cover-up. Can you enlighten me?
Story, you know, people say that, and for whatever reason, a lot of times this is kind of tied into UFOs or some other sort of supernatural kind of abilities that the Bigfoot has or that they don't want us to know about. And so, in that sort of realm, they say that people have been like essentially visited by like Men in Black and their Bigfoot stories have been covered up. Their Bigfoot bodies have been, you know, covered up, taken away. You know, I haven't seen any evidence that proved any of this irrefutably to me. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was some stuff like that, that, I mean, maybe it wasn't even intentionally covered up. The government is not always the most efficient at doing their job.
You don't say.
Yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if some errors have been made with evidence in the past, and it appears to be like a, you know, some sort of cover up, but maybe it was just errors.
Have you seen Bigfoot yourself?
So I have not. I would love to, but I have definitely talked to people that believe they have, for sure.
Uh huh.
It's really interesting when
what
you have those
some
kind
of their stories.
They're so, you know, you look in their eye, you're looking kind of to kind of see if there's any sort of evidence this is made up or something. And they 100% believe their story, you know, and that's really compelling. Some of the stories sound super, you know, they're very educated people. They have no horse, the dog in the race or whatever the saying is. Yeah. They have nothing to gain from telling this story, really. In some of the situations, it's almost shameful. They have more to lose from telling the story than anything to gain.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are real, really convincing stories.
Exactly. And I made that point many a times here on the program. As far as Bigfoot, you say you have not seen, but you want to see?
I would love to see. I mean, I have a very open mind with a lot of these things, and UFOs, Bigfoot. I mean, even there's a lot of other animals that are involved in cryptozoology. I'm open to anything. Like, I want to have my own personal experiences with this, and I've definitely faced the, you know, maybe that could be a negative thing for me, like if it went poorly. But I'm ready to accept that as a possibility for the chance to have my own personal experience story. Because it seems to me that is the best way of knowing. You know, some of these people, whether I believe or I don't believe, other people that have had their own experience, they feel like they know. It's without a doubt true. And that's a really interesting place to be. You know, I'd love to have that for something like this.
Well, what are some of the stories that you have heard from those around you of Bigfoot? Are they terrified? Do they get fearful of these encounters? What's the sense of that?
So absolutely. And I mean, it sounds kind of silly, but even not having an encounter is kind of scary.
You mean like hearing something?
You know, you're out in the forest, you hear animals that are large. You know, whether you're hearing wolves, you know they're wolves, but that's still frightening to be out in the deep forest potentially where there are bears. Potentially, there's a lot of predators out there that are just, you know, legitimate animals that could do a lot of harm. And, you know, it seems to me the deeper you are, the more possible it is to encounter some sort of a Bigfoot. Although I have heard a few stories that were really good, where I remember a police officer's story about how he was driving some back road. I can't remember exactly where it was, but I believe it was in Northern California.
A police officer driving a back road he believes in Northern California. We will continue with Jeremy Norrie He is the director and co-producer of Don't Call Me Bigfoot. The documentary is up on Amazon. We'll be right back.
This show, especially when it leads into the paranormal.
Don't Call Me Bigfoot, available to stream on Amazon. The director and co-producer Jeremy Norrie is with me, and he was telling us about a story. So I'll let you continue, Jeremy, because I'm intrigued now.
Oh, yeah, no problem. It was a story that I heard from a police officer, and I think it is in Northern California, but it could be out east somewhere, that basically just saw a Sasquatch walk directly across the street in an open area.
That's ballsy.
Yeah, you know, to me, that's a surprising thing, and he obviously has very little to gain from this. You know, you are kind of the laughingstock to your other officers to a certain degree, and definitely a lot more to lose than to gain, but came forward with the story because it was something that he experienced, and it was, you know, a real enough sighting that you would think, oh, there's no chance that he's mistaking a bear or some other animal for a Sasquatch. I like a lot of the sightings that are clear enough to where that seems very, very unlikely. Some of the sightings that you hear, in fact, quite a lot of the sightings that you hear are far off to where you see something in the distance. It's moving a certain way, but for whatever reason, you're either afraid of it, it's doing intimidating things like throwing rocks or making sounds that are intimidating, and you don't go any closer, and you never really get a great look. Some people, from whatever reason, they stumble upon Sasquatch, or I have heard a few where Sasquatch isn't, you know, entertained maybe or intrigued in, you know, interested in us, and has kind of come very close to campsites and things like that. I remember a really great story that I'd heard prior to what he's doing now, the Survivor Man, when he told his Sasquatch encounter story from one of his original shows where they just dropped him off all by himself out in the middle of nowhere. And it's a very compelling story. Those are the ones that get you.
So talk about why you wanted to make a movie. I mean, there's enough Bigfoot movies out there. There's enough Bigfoot reality shows, quote reality shows, and documentaries out there. How is yours trying to be different?
So in talking to me, you kind of can tell that I have a more kind of logistical approach to the whole subject, where I like the fantastic stories, but I really need some evidence that I can hold on to kind of prove that these experiences are real. And a lot of the Bigfoot documentaries that are out there are, sensationalized maybe a little bit. It's very ominous music. Even the name Bigfoot kind of tied into why we called it Don't Call Me Bigfoot. The name Bigfoot is attached to essentially a hoax. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, it was these big feet. The guy reported it. It was in the newspaper. The name kind of took off. And then later on, someone confessed to having faked the footprints. And so that's part of why people that are authentically into this subject don't really like the name Bigfoot, because that's kind of attached to a hoax. I wanted to approach the subject kind of tackling all the different evidence, basically, and the things that are the most logistical and the most, you know, compelling from somebody that's looking at it from an average person. Maybe even you've never really delved too deep into the subject. Our film kind of goes over a lot of the basics, a lot of the evidence that has been gathered over the years, and then some of the newer stuff that is, you know, more interesting and kind of also, you know, proven evidence for the most part. So that's kind of where we came from with the film approach. And, you know, haven't seen a lot of other Bigfoot stories that are just really matter of fact and kind of breaking it down for the average person. So that's what we were doing.
Which one was a hoax?
So the name Bigfoot comes from it's like I believe it was loggers who were in Northern California, and this was a while ago. I'd have to look it up to have all the exact specific dates and times and locations and everything, but it's very easily accessible. Anybody who's interested can just look up the story. And it was a while ago. I can't remember exactly how long, but it was, you know, they were doing logging in an area, and
this the story of the loggers who got supposedly attacked by a Bigfoot?
No, this was so that is a great story too, and that is a common story when you're talking to people about why they are covering up the Bigfoot existence is because it has to do with money and logging and et cetera. And that's a not entirely unreasonable a theory, but this particular story is not really tied into that. This, I believe, was more of a prank, and it was some big feet that were discovered one morning in an area where people were working, doing logging, basically. And they saw these big feet. They reported it, you know, as, oh my God, what could have left these tracks? And it was a news story, you know, that was very popular. And that's how the name, they described it very matter of fact. They're like, these were big feet that we saw, you know, tracks of. And that's kind of how that name became associated with the creature, the Sasquatch creature. And more specifically, Northern California's stories about Sasquatch. You know, they don't really call Bigfoot where the Yeti is, and you know, other places, they don't really call it that. They have their own specific names. And so later on, time passes. It was quite a number of years, I believe. And then someone confessed that they had faked the footprints and hoaxed the entire story. And so that kind of demonized that name Bigfoot to an even higher degree, where, you know, the people that believe in cryptozoology and Sasquatch, they don't want, you know, hoaxes. They're legitimately trying to prove this. And when hoaxes become the big news story, it just makes the whole subject seem untrue. So that's basically the Bigfoot story right there.
Yeah, it makes the hard work of everybody who's dedicated any amount of time to this field, it really just undermines them, because they have to work that much harder to try to convince everyone.
Oh, yeah. And it's one of the more interesting things with the people looking for Bigfoot is they are some of the most skeptical of other people's stories. So, you know, there's part of why there's no real videos or pictures, or there's some that are accepted a little bit, but it's still the Patterson Gilman video that everybody goes back to as the most legitimate evidence as far as picture and video. And it's partly because none of them believe each other's videos. They all think they're hoaxing each other. So I've seen a couple that I thought were potentially real. You know, a lot of times they're really far off shots where people are out, you know, exploring or camping or doing something, and then somebody notices, like, way in the distance, something, and you can kind of see, you know, a creature or person or something walking. And those are interesting to me, you know? But I think those are not hoaxes. They're legitimately seeing something. What is that? Is that a person that just maybe is far off the beaten path? Or is that some sort of a creature?
Yeah, and then the question is, it is a creature that we know of, or is it a creature that we don't know of?
Absolutely, absolutely. But one of the things I think that's really interesting about cryptozoology as a subject, mm-hmm. is that there are a number of animals that we know are real animals that existed at one point in time, and then you still hear stories of people seeing them. And some of them have been gone theoretically for thousands of years, right? So that it's just such an interesting thing. And you know, the law of averages, right? There's so many of these things. There's so many stories. One of these has got to be true, if not more than one. So. Yeah,
and I suspect that there are a fair amount of people who will embellish and will say, hey, you know, I saw Bigfoot, when they actually didn't, and who will try to think it's cool to tell their friends and their family about it and their coworkers and flaunt it online. And I'm sure there's people out there who make a whole bunch out of nothing, and there are those people out there, but I think that they are the minority, and I think that there's a lot of intelligent people out there who, as you mentioned, have a lot more to lose than they ever do to gain from coming out with a Bigfoot encounter, who've legitimately seen something that they can't explain. Is this a Bigfoot sighting? We don't know. But people for hundreds of years have reported seeing something. They can't all be wrong.
Absolutely. That's how I feel about it too. And you know, the hoaxing for Bigfoot is kind of dangerous. You know, your people have been killed hoaxing, you know, it's not a smart thing to do. So the large majority of the people that are interested in it, I think, are authentic. And quite a number of the ones most interested have had their own personal experience that was so compelling to them that it has driven this issue in their life. And they are, you know, pushed essentially by this experience to try and prove this to other people.
So are you convinced that Bigfoot is real?
So I think one of them is real. Like, I didn't realize how many different – it's essentially everywhere in the world. You know, there's a little bit of variation. One of the guys in our film actually mentioned it, and that you know, there are odd places where people say they see Bigfoot that are probably unlikely. Like, I would doubt that you would see a Sasquatch in the desert somewhere. Or, you know, this kind of thing. But...
Well, they'd probably run out of water.
Yeah, exactly. And that tends to be kind of what it is wherever there's water, wherever there's a potential food source, even if it's plant-based, you know, there are primates that eat fruit. Gorillas don't eat meat, you know. So as long as there's some sort of a plant or a food source of some kind and water, it seems reasonable that there could potentially be Sasquatch in that, and it has to be fairly remote, in my opinion. I hear stories sometimes in, you know, semi-populated areas, and those seem very unlikely. Even if it's a path where they're somehow traveling, just those stories are unlikely true to me. I definitely lean towards these are essentially, you know, independent groups of similar creatures.
Do you think they don't want to be seen because they don't want to be caught, or they just don't want people to know that they exist?
Well, I think they're intimidated by us to a certain degree, and that would be the number one reason why they don't want to be seen. Like, these other animals that we are discovering here and there, they seem like they also are mostly trying to stay hidden. And even when you discover animals in cities, a lot of time, like bears, very frequently certain kinds of bears don't want to go anywhere near where the humans are. They, you know, typically would be out during the day, but if they're in a place where humans are, they kind of move their pattern to being at night so they can avoid humans. This is not an unusual behavior for animals. So That's kind of what I think it leans towards. It's just natural trying to avoid conflict, you know?
And so why, in your opinion, has there not really been the ultimate evidence of Bigfoot?
Well, somebody needs to bring out a skull or a full body of some kind, or allegedly some of the DNA has been determined as that, and that hasn't convinced everyone that Bigfoot is real. So you really need even more than just that. So, I mean, other than bringing out a full corpse, and that's a whole other issue where people, I mean, and that's interesting in a lot of ways too, in that certain states or counties, they have laws that you cannot kill Bigfoot. It's an issue amongst the whole community on whether you, is it right to kill Bigfoot in order to prove his existence, or is it wrong just entirely to kill animals like that?
Well, it would seem that it would have to be recognized as actually a legitimate species in order for it to be classified as endangered or can't kill, do not kill.
That's what I think too, but I also think that it's interesting some places have just gone ahead and made laws that say you can't do it. Do they know something that we don't know? That leads towards these government conspiracies. So it might just be cautionary, and it wouldn't surprise me if somebody
I guess it could be a preemptive strike, maybe in case one day that comes, the law is already in place.
Exactly. Somebody maybe that's interested in it, that has the position in government to be able to push something like that, and then they make it happen.
Yeah. So do you think in your lifetime that we'll get that evidence?
Oh, God. You know, so I didn't think we'd get what we're getting with the UFO stuff in my lifetime.
That's a good response.
I would think no, you know, it's probably not going to happen, but you never know. And what I've been really impressed by is now we have, as technology is advancing, you know, drones are really opening up the possibility for Bigfoot researchers, where they go out. One of the difficult things is the forest, especially in really deep parts of the forest, is hard to navigate. But when you have a drone that you can set up in the sky, you can really cover a lot more area and look for, you know, abnormalities or places where you want to kind of travel that look like they might be the best places to go. And that might really help us with getting some sort of concrete evidence on one of these Sasquatch type creatures.
Of course, getting the attention to such a discovery is a whole other thing. So if you kill a Sasquatch, then you have a body to deal with. And then the question is, how do you preserve that body?
Well, I mean, one thing that is kind of goes back to how the media has been both helpful and harmful on the subject. I saw on CNN that, you know, they were going to have a whole segment on Bigfoot, that somebody had brought in a body. They had it like essentially in some sort of an ice chest. And I thought this was real, you know, CNN, this was before fake news or anything. We thought, oh, this is, you know, a legitimate mainstream news source. They, of course, would have done their research before they bring these guys on CNN with, you know, a body.
Jeremy, you're hilarious.
You know, the whole thing turned out to be a hoax. And then, you know, you're left feeling foolish in the end.
Well, that wouldn't be the first fake news, I'm sure, on that station.
Exactly. But the one thing that proved to me is that, you know, if ever there is a legitimate body, don't worry about it. It's going to be everywhere in the mainstream news. So, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, happens in a not
see,
horrible.
Then there lies the question. So you have a body. How do you prove it's real?
Yeah, well, I guess they're going to have to do an autopsy on it in some sort of way, right? You'd look at it, you'd kind of do the DNA, you'd say, does this match the DNA of any other, you know, creatures that we have? You'd kind of do an investigation on, like, does it match anything internally? You know, is there any abnormalities to tell us right away that this is something different? You know, you're going to have a full-on study that, just like anything else, for people to, you know, largely accept this, it's going to have to really be scrutinized by science. That's going to be an interesting process.
Yeah, because then there needs to be some sort of examination of everything, literally from top to bottom. But see, there are scientists out there, anthropologists and whatnot, who are already prepared to handle that evidence. So I don't think it's a problem of having the experts in place to be able to examine it. I think it's just a problem with actually getting the specimen in hand in order to be examined.
Yep, and a large enough sample of something that it's irrefutable. There have been interesting things about hair samples, and like I said before, the DNA, the blood samples, but like they're just too small. You need something bigger. I remember seeing something where it was a Russian story about a Sasquatch like scalp, and I thought, oh, that's getting close. But then as I read more about it, it's a questionable story. I don't know if it's, you know, irrefutable evidence. So something more, you know, substantial, the like a skull or some sort of piece of solid evidence that really could tell us a lot. You see what they've been able to do with the various human or Neanderthal type creatures that we've discovered. And that kind of science is going to be what has to prove Bigfoot, basically.
We'll continue with Jeremy Norrie. The documentary is on Amazon. Don't Call Me Bigfoot. Paranormal News with Brad Bernards is coming right up.
Stay tuned for Paranormal News with Brad Bernards. Only on Into the Paranormal.
Paranormal News, I'm Brad Bernards. When NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter arrived in orbit around the moon in 2009, scientists immediately started firing lasers at it. More specifically, they were firing lasers at a small reflector array, roughly the size of a paperback book, trying to bounce light back to Earth. And after almost 10 years, they have finally succeeded, according to reporting in Science Alert. It's the first time photos have been successfully reflected back to Earth from a lunar orbiter, and it not only gives us a new way to perform measurements of and around the moon, it can help us understand the conditions on the lunar surface that could be degrading instruments placed there over 50 years ago. The Apollo program left behind equipment for continued monitoring, such as seismometers and 3 laser reflectors. Why laser reflectors? Well, if you send a really powerful laser beam at the moon and time how long it takes to bounce back, you can make a really accurate measurement of the distance between the two points based on the speed of light. Vast areas of the Martian night sky pulse in ultraviolet light, according to images from NASA's MAVEN spacecraft. The results are being used to illuminate complex circulation patterns in the Martian atmosphere. According to NASA, MAVEN's images offer our first global insights into atmospheric motions in Mars' middle atmosphere, a critical region where air currents carry gases between the lowest and highest layers, said Nick Schneider of the University of Colorado's Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics. The brightenings occur when vertical winds carry gases down to regions of higher density, speeding up the chemical reactions that create nitric oxide and power the ultraviolet glow. There's more news at ParabnormalRadio.com. I'm Brad Bernards, Parabnormal News.
I absolutely 100% believe Bigfoot exists.
Something is big out there.
I'm always in search of Bigfoot.
It's a passion.
Bigfoot isn't supposed to exist. Monsters aren't supposed to exist.
And the hair stood up on the back of my neck. What am I going to do if something goes down here?
The cryptozoology means the study of unknown animals.
The state of the world, we need to really start thinking in terms of saving the environment and saving some of the species. It literally picked me up at night, the idea that you can have this species that can tell us so much.
How much evidence do I have to present to you before I'm not the ridiculous one and you are? The king has come home. Everybody be quiet.
Between twilight and the witching hour, there's a place we call Into the Paranormal.
That's the trailer for Don't Call Me Bigfoot. It's available up on Amazon. My guest is Jeremy Norrie. And he's the director and co-producer of Don't Call Me Bigfoot. They've got a Facebook page as well. We have put that link up as well on ParanormalRadio.com. We're going to go to a question here. We go to a question on Twitter that we have coming in here from Sloan. Sloan tells us, I've heard it talked about that Sasquatch is an alien because sightings of Sasquatch have coincided with UFO sightings. What is your thoughts on that? Go ahead, Jeremy.
So I've kind of been asked this question a lot, and you know, my mind is open to this. I haven't seen anything that proved to me that Sasquatch is you know, an extraterrestrial or traveling through the UFOs, but there are stories where just like you said, basically that Sasquatch sightings and UFO sightings kind of line up and are in the same kind of time frame. That might just be some sort of synchronicity if that is happening, in my opinion. But there's also stories that people have seen Sasquatch essentially like disappear or dematerialize, like kind of like Star Trek type thing, where they're, you know, maybe beaming or traveling interdimensionally. And then my most favorite one that I've heard recently is that this, and I don't necessarily believe this to be true, but it's a great story. So that when you hear about aliens, a lot of times they have very frail bodies, right? They are mostly focused on, you know, their brain and their eyes, and then these very, you know, tiny torsos and arms and limbs, and they would be very fragile down here to a lot of animals and a lot of other terrain and et cetera. And that Sasquatches are somehow like hardy suits or you know, like essentially their earthbound form. So that these aliens or extraterrestrials, when they want to come down to Earth, they somehow transfer their consciousness or whatever into a Sasquatch creature or body, and that body materializes on Earth, and they go around and collect. So I don't know what they're doing down here, but you know, that's one I thought was really a fun story. It leads towards like a lot of anime that I used to love. So.
Well, and what I would say in response to that question, and it's a great question, is that I think there's more than synchronicity there, because I've talked with you know, many guests who have cited these stories of UFOs being seen in relationship to Bigfoot, and of course with UFOs go alien. So, Sloan, thank you so much for the question on Twitter. Really appreciate that. All right, Jeremy, tell us about the movie and who you talked with in the movie.
Yeah, both. So we have a few different people. The most famous person is Nick Redfern. And I live in Big Bear Lake, California, and we have a convention here called the Alien Snow Fest.
Oh, yes. I'm so jealous that you live there, actually.
Yeah, it's you know, it's got its perks and it's got its hard things too, but I love it. And Alien Snow Fest is a really great event, and the guy Trevor that does the event, he was really helpful in our trying to find people to be featured in the film. When I started doing the research for the film, one of the things I kept kind of coming across was many people don't want to go on camera about this stuff. And so we were really fortunate to find a couple gentlemen who, you know, they're not really well known, but this is kind of they are deep into the culture of Bigfoot and they know quite a lot. Matt was really, really a great interview for us. He just was a really likable person, and that kind of came across on camera really well. And people identify with a lot of the things that he said about the whole phenomenon. So that's kind of how we did it. And then the other side to it was that I didn't want to go hunting in the forest with night vision cameras and then leave everyone disappointed when we don't find anything at the end of the show.
But that's how all the big shows do it, right?
Yeah. For me, I didn't want to do that. There's plenty of other shows that do that. Maybe someday I'll do something like that. But for this particular one, we wanted to kind of be more serious about it. And there's just so much ground to cover if you're going from the very beginning to kind of where we are now. You know, I thought it was enough for us to do it how we did it. But Matt did offer to take us out in the forest sometime and go hunting for Bigfoot. So we may have to do that.
So I was wondering if you had any, like, survival tips for folks.
Right. Well, I mean, like, Matt does do that often. And so I was asking him kind of about it. And, you know, he suggested to bring a weapon. He has a gun with him every time he's out looking for Bigfoot, just in case something were to happen. Some of these stories are, you know, kind of similar to other predators where Bigfoot maybe, like, wants your food or wants something from you or wants you to leave an area and is aggressive in some sort of way. And you always want to be protected. So I understand that. And then I agree with him in that one of the best ways to probably have your own experience is to be quiet. You know, in a lot of the shows, they're out there making a lot of noise or making sounds. You've got all this camera equipment and this and that. It's, you know, you're kind of, if you've ever been out in the forest and you're dealing with regular animals, they skedaddle. They get out of there when that kind of stuff is going on. They don't know what that is. And you would imagine the same thing's going to be true for Sasquatch. So I would recommend being quiet, but that also means being careful because you never know what other animals that are in that area that you have not scared off. So it's something I encourage, but I also encourage safety. So
why do you think so many people are fascinated with the subject of Bigfoot?
So I think it kind of goes back to our deep, we as human beings are explorers, you know, we're adventurers to a certain degree. We identify with people like Indiana Jones, who's out there, you know, looking for undiscovered things, first time experiences, you know, things that are very unique in our human lives that we could, you know, really identify with. They give you, when you discover something and you're the first person or something like that to achieve even just a simple goal, it's a wonderful feeling. And a lot of this stuff is maybe kind of deep in our roots where we have natural fears even as children from a lot of different things like spiders and monsters and what have you. This could be instilled in us from a long time ago, and that might be something we're still identifying with now. So yeah, I think a lot of the things that we do as humans are strange, but the ability to kind of discover things and break new ground and make progress. Those are all just really normal human things that we all kind of naturally do. I think
we have that curiosity, all of us, each in us. And that probably was part of the motivation for you to make the movie, right?
You know, I'm interested in all. We have two other films that we have another film called I Want to Believe that is UFO, a very similar kind of approach that we took on Don't Call Me Bigfoot, but towards the UFO phenomenon. And then we have another one that's, you know, a hard to believe story that I kind of stumbled upon while we were doing our research for this with an alien contactee. And it's really been interesting how many people identify with alien contactee. I'm starting to see that one thing that also seems to be common with a lot of people, both in Bigfoot and UFO, is that they have these unique experiences that they're trying to to kind of still figure out or prove to a certain degree. And they stick with them through their whole life. It's really interesting.
The experiences that they have, the alien and Bigfoot experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they have an encounter, they have a sighting or something like that, and that drives them to keep looking for more evidence. And a lot of times that results in other experiences, which is, it's just a really interesting part of the phenomenon. And so, I was always skeptical, and now I'm a lot less.
So is there a connection? It does sound like you believe that there is a connection between many of these experiences.
Well, you know, it kind of goes back to something, a phenomenon I think is very true, in that, you know, we're all connected in a lot of different ways that we don't fully understand. And I think that some of the science and evidence that people have discovered about intent is, I think, very legitimate science, you know. And I recently watched one of my favorite UFO people is Stephen Greer. And I don't, you know, entirely believe everything that he has done, but he brought up a really great subject in his last movie that I think is very true. And that we as humans have not completely figured out what our minds are capable of. And what even just large groups thinking the same thing or having the same kind of intention, you know, kind of organized thought and organized, people often say manifesting these days. It's more true than people really give credit to. The placebo effect is a very real thing. A lot of times people misunderstand that as, you know, you think that you're getting medicine and that your healing or whatever is all in your head. Placebo effect is authentic healing that is essentially caused merely by the thought that you received medicine. But the healing that you experience is authentic. And, you know, I think that kind of falls into a lot of these other subjects, that it doesn't always work, but it seems like there's more truth to, you know, manifesting and wanting and really truly believing and having really powerful emotional feelings towards these subjects and having them kind of line up the same way. I'm just super curious to see more of the science on that in the future. I think we're going to start to see really compelling evidence there.
Well, are you familiar with the eDNA?
That's new to me. No, what is that?
So the eDNA is environmental DNA, and basically they take DNA from the environment in order to determine, you know, basically whether or not the species, what its environment is.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. And new science like that I find really interesting.
Well, and so that's one of the, you mentioned the science and that we are on, I think, the precipice of some of this stuff. And I agree with you. And environmental DNA is basically the analysis of nests, likely with hair, that have been attributed to Sasquatch. A lot of this work is actually taking place on the Olympic Peninsula up here in Washington State. And I've actually had the opportunity to talk with a few folks who have been on the ground floor of that, literally, here in the Pacific Northwest. And so it's no surprise that, Jeremy, you haven't heard of that, because it's something that they're breaking in here in the Pacific Northwest, at least there in the Olympic Peninsula. And it will be fascinating for me to see what comes of that. So that's one of the ways that science is being used to prove what people have talked about for hundreds of years. You mentioned feelings. Yeah. Do you think that Bigfoot has feelings?
Oh, absolutely. Some of the stories that I've heard and experiences seem very human, you know, like I was saying before. And, you know, the more human they are, the more likely they are to have extremely similar problems and passions and things like we have. it might kind of be very different because of their, you know, different experiencing of life being out in the forest and what have you. But, you know, I definitely think that certain, I don't think it's more, it might be more species kind of generated, but I think personality is something that kind of goes unnoticed with the variations of these different creatures. I think they probably all have their own personality to a certain degree. They're all the same species or what have you, but that you could have a family that has very different personalities from the parent figures to the children figures. It doesn't seem very unlikely to me.
It would certainly seem that if they had feelings that those feelings would probably center around being bashful because they don't like to be caught. They don't like to be picked up on cameras. They don't like to be seen. As I said earlier, national hide and seek champion. Now it's the social distance champion, Sasquatch.
It wouldn't surprise me if some of the females kind of lean towards more wanting to avoid any sort of confrontation, being more nurturing and wanting to take care of other younger or other Bigfoot creatures. And that some of the males might be very aggressive, especially if they're very big. You know, they might have, you know, same kind of alpha type hierarchy that other species have. And it wouldn't surprise me that they have different personalities kind of based on those kind of things.
Well, Jeremy, it's been fascinating to talk to you about the subject of Bigfoot. I can't wait to check out the documentary myself. Tell folks who might just be tuning in right now again about it.
Yeah, absolutely. We kind of took a very serious and matter-of-fact approach of the whole subject of Bigfoot, and we delved into the early evidence all the way up until the present evidence, and it's not really based on going out in the forest and looking for Bigfoot or any particular sightings. This is more of a general topic where we just tried to address all the different forms of evidence and the pros and cons, some of the things that people would say to try and disprove the subject. And we just try to address it all in a very serious, matter-of-fact way.
I wish you nothing but success with this and all your future documentaries and in your search of Bigfoot.
Oh, thank you very much.
I mean Sasquatch, because we're not supposed to call him Bigfoot.
Right. Yeah, I still do the same thing.
All right. That's Jeremy Norrie. And again, we have all the links up. You can get that on Amazon. It's streaming there. And they've got a Facebook page as well where you can check out, I believe, some clips. And of course, you heard the trailer, saw the trailer earlier on. And so we appreciate Jeremy coming on, and we wish them all of the success with the movie, Don't Call Me Bigfoot. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to go searching for Bigfoot, we have put a link up on Twitter and on our Facebook page of the top places that you can search for Bigfoot, according to the reports compiled by the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, BFRO. And here in the Pacific Northwest, we certainly have ripe conditions, apparently. I don't know if it's our damp climate, our mild summers, although right now it's 100 degrees and it's hot as blazes outside. And I don't know if Bigfoot tolerates mild weather or humid weather, I guess it would be. So I don't know if a place like Arizona or a place like, you know, the South might be conducive or ripe for Bigfoot to survive. But certainly here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a damp climate, you know, 6 months out of the year, it seems. And they have no problem hiding because a lot of us, for those 6 months out of the year, we have no problem staying inside because it's just rainy, cold. For some, miserable. I don't mind it personally. I've grown quite accustomed to it here. And I actually like storms. I like snow. I like rain. I like it all. I tolerate 100-degree heat. Not as much as I, or as good as I once did. But I'm tolerating it here We got the air conditioners working at full steam. I think this is going to be the first time all summer that we don't turn them off all night. We're just going to keep them rolling because it's gonna be, you know, in the 70s, which is sticky icky when you're trying to sleep in, you know, late August. So I don't envy any of you out there in the audience who are in the heat right now and don't have any sort of air conditioning. I think if Bigfoot is out there, and I believe the Bigfoot is out there, and if the Bigfoot is here in the Pacific Northwest, that it probably is in the coolest spot that it can find right now, which is probably out near the ocean, near some sort of body of water, trying to cool down, maybe in the body of water. There have been stories of a Bigfoot actually, you know, seen in water. Sometimes they like to fish for rocks and, well, fish and everything else that they can get their hands on. So there certainly have been those stories out there over time of Bigfoot frequenting bodies of water, but it certainly is not common. It's not one of those stories that you hear very often about Bigfoot venturing out into water. I'm Jeremy Scott. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, and I thank you so much for listening to the program here tonight. And until we talk to you next time here on Into the Paranormal, I'm Jeremy Scott. Night-night, friends.